It's so interesting and fun that you are recreating that special moment and doing a concert of the concert that was broadcast on November 14th of 1943, that famous Bernstein concert. So briefly outline that amazing historical moment that launched Bernstein's career.
Yeah, it really was pretty amazing, Jacqueline. And, you know, first, let me just say that he had been appointed an assistant conductor of the Philharmonic for the 43-44 season. Arthur Rosinski, who was the music director of the Philharmonic at the time, saw him conduct one of the student orchestras at Tanglewood the summer before and thought he had talent. But these assistant conductor jobs, even today, are sort of thankless jobs because you've got to attend all the rehearsals and all the concerts and wait, or maybe the better word is to say hope that somebody gets sick or is late for a flight or something, and then you get a chance to conduct. But believe me, conductors that I know and have read about are pretty much real good, healthy specimens, and they don't get sick very often. And even if they are sick, there's still some way to get up to the podium. And I've seen that happen too. But anyway, you know, he was appointed in this position and really never thought he would ever get a chance to conduct the Philharmonic. But the story goes that the day before, on the 13th of November, 1943, he received a call from Bruno Zerato, who was the Philharmonic's associate manager at the time, and said that Bruno Walter, who was supposed to conduct the concert, had come down with the flu. There was no way they would know if he would be able to conduct the next day, but he just wanted to tip Bernstein, let him know that he may have to conduct. Rudzinski, by the way, had a farm in Massachusetts and had said that he would try to drive down to conduct the program, but there was a snowstorm that weekend on the East Coast, so they weren't even sure that could happen. But in true Mr. Bernstein fashion, he just sort of went about his day on Saturday. That evening, he accompanied Jenny Terrell, the very famous mezzo-soprano, in his song cycle, I Hate Music, in New York. And that went beautifully. And the whole time, not only at the recital, but also afterwards, there was a party at her apartment, which he stayed for the most part all night. He never mentioned a word because he was sworn to secrecy that this information was just for him. So the next morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, Zerato called Bernstein and said that he's on. Walter was too ill to conduct, and Rudzinski would not have enough time to drive down. And that's the story. And what's amazing is that the program was performed without change, and it included the Manfred Overture by Schumann, the theme variations and finale by the Hungarian composer, young Hungarian composer at the time, Miklos Rosa, and then Strauss's Don Juan, and of course the Wagner's epic overture to Die Meistersingers. What I think, Jacqueline, is more astonishing than anything about this event was that, and it truly was one of the great events of all music history, was that Mr. Bernstein was born and raised and educated in America. So he was truly a full-fledged American conductor. And although many conductors before him had made these kind of auspicious debuts, filling in for somebody at the last minute, Toscanini, Bruno Walter, Carl Böhm, they all had filled in for somebody and became sort of household names overnight. But the fact that Bernstein was an American, that made the difference, that he finally had broken that glass ceiling in that there were Americans now that could go on and have careers. And he paved the way for many, many of us to become conductors. And that I think is really one of the most fascinating issues about this event.
And not only did he just step onto the podium and conduct this, but also this was a live broadcast, a national live broadcast.
That's right. It was estimated that over 10 million people heard this particular concert of the Philharmonic from Carnegie Hall over the CBS radio network. So, yes, in fact, in those days, that was a lot of people. And the fact that they heard this 25-year-old conducting this great music virtually made him a household name overnight. The headlines in both newspapers in New York said that Of course, they gushed over his energy and gifts, talent, musical talent and vitality, and that's really what caught the eye of the critics and, of course, the 2,000 people that were at Carnegie Hall.
Tell us about this opening overture by Schumann.
Schumann is an interesting character. You know, he had a relatively short life, only 46 years he lived, but he wrote four wonderful symphonies and a piano concerto and a lot of songs, a lot of piano music. And I love his music, but it's a darker brand of music. It's not, there's not much that are humorous or will make you smile, but it definitely is the kind of music that sort of casts a spell over you. And when you think of the great Rhenish Symphony, for example, his third has a real sparkle and a feel for the whole Rhine Valley. And that's what he was so good at. And this particular music, the Overture to Manfred, was incidental music based on a poem called Manfred by Lord Byron. And Schumann read this poem many times, and it affected him in ways that beautiful literature can to some people, and brought him to tears at times. And he wrote this piece. It was incidental music. It was, I think, four or five sections, but this became the most famous and the one that's used today. But the overture's very powerful and casts sort of a dark spell over everyone that's listening in the concert hall. And it's very unsettling music in that he creates that by using a lot of syncopation, and there's just sort of a certain urgency about this music that happens. But it's a wonderful way to open a program, and I'm looking very much forward to conducting it.
And you mentioned briefly Rosa. Tell us about this theme in variations and finale.
Miklos Rosa was a wonderful Hungarian-American conductor. Of course, he was primarily known as a film composer, but in his own words, he considered that he had a double life, writing concert music and film music. And his film music was just absolutely fabulous. And he wrote things like Spellbound and Double Life and Ben-Hur, of which he won Academy Awards for. So, you know, it's really wonderful music. But he also wrote a violin concerto that was commissioned by Yasha Heifetz and a cello concerto commissioned by Jana Starker. So he had really success in both arenas. And this particular piece was championed very early on by great conductors like Charles Munch and Furtwängler. And, you know, he really became quite a household name in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And this piece is inspired when he left Budapest as a young man. He bid farewell to his family. And when he got on the train, he then wrote this melody that starts with this beautiful oboe theme. It's very melancholy and very dark in color, and it, of course, represents his mood at the time. And this theme is followed by eight variations which have a lot of variety and tempo changes and lots of mood changing and color. But overall, Jacqueline, this is music for a big, full, wonderful Hollywood orchestra. And if you can just close your eyes, you can just imagine the 110 musicians of the MGM Orchestra playing this this kind of music. So it's wonderful music. It's a premiere for the Des Moines Symphony. It's a new work to me, and I'm just looking forward to conducting it.
And it was a new work for Leonard Bernstein as well, I bet.
It certainly was. He had never conducted any of these pieces before, obviously, on this program. But it was something that he had looked forward to conducting, but had never conducted until that infamous day in November.
So tell us about your guest cellist who's coming.
Well, I'm very excited about working with Julian Schwartz. He is the son of Gerard Schwartz, who was for many years the music director of the Seattle Symphony and mostly Mozart Festival in New York, and has been a guest conductor here about 3 years ago. Julian was his soloist at the time. He performed a beautiful Shostakovich concerto. And when I heard that piece, I thought, this is someone that I would really like to work with. So I've invited Julian back to play this wonderful tone poem by Richard Strauss called Don Quixote with me.
And you're also inviting your principal violist on stage as well.
That's exactly right. Elaine plays is indeed our principal violist, and she'll play the part of Sancho Panza. And of course, the solo cellist, Julian Schwartz, will play the part of Don Quixote.
So tell us about this amazing work written by Richard Strauss.
It really is an amazing work, Jacqueline. That's the perfect adjective to describe it. It was written at an interesting time in music history, the late 1800s, where there was still quite a bit of controversy between programmatic music, that music that's inspired by a story or tells a story, or versus absolute music, which was music that was just music for music's sake. So there was still a lot of discussion about what would last and what's better and so on. And thankful for all of us, Richard Strauss decided that the programmatic music was what he did best, and we have many, many, many tone poems to prove that. But this is a terrific piece of music. It's based, of course, on the wonderful book by Miguel Cervantes called Don Quixote, and Strauss has subtitled his piece Fantastic Variations for a Large Orchestra on a Theme of Knightly Character. It's a theme and then a set of variations that primarily gives you a musical depiction of this wonderful story that Cervantes wrote. And for example, the theme lasts about 5 minutes. The orchestra is used in a wonderful way to demonstrate the theme. And then the first variation, the woodwinds and strings come in and sort of introduce us to Dulcinea. The oboe plays this beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous theme. The cello, for the most part, is just a virtuoso part. It's full of grace and nobility and gorgeous, gorgeous singing lines. But Quixote and Sancho come across quite a few adventures throughout this, and each variation is a different adventure. For example, there's one where Don Quixote comes across these giants. He thinks they're giants, but they're really a bunch of windmills. And of course, there's a fight, and you hear the bass drum and harp, this long glissando, and that's the Don Quixote falling off his horse. So the music is very descriptive at this point. There's another variation where he meets a herd of sheep, but in his imagination, he thinks it's an enemy army. And you can hear these bleating herd of sheep through the flutter tongues and the brass, and they make a perfect sound that if you close your eyes, you'd swear it was a herd of sheep screaming. And there's many other variations. There's one, my favorite, I think, is the one where the two heroes ride this imaginary horse, and this is played by not only the orchestra doing these fabulous glissandos up and down, but there's a wind machine that is in the percussion section that is just absolutely vivid. So, you know, it's kind of music that I think the public loves. It's a lot of appeal because, in fact, it does tell a story, but it also is one of the most magnificent orchestrations ever written. So I'm always, always happy to conduct a tone poem by Richard Strauss, and I know our audiences will enjoy and appreciate this music.
So tell us about the work that's going to close the concert.
Yeah, this is interesting because, Jacqueline, this piece, because of the length of the broadcast over CBS Radio, the contract that CBS had with the Philharmonic was that they could only last 90 minutes. So the Overture to Meistersingers by Richard Wagner was not included in the broadcast, but we are indeed going to play it because it was played at that concert. Of course, everyone knows Wagner was one of the great opera composers of all time, and this particular opera is one of the longest of all time. It takes 4.5 hours to perform Meistersingers, and it was premiered in the mid-1860s, 1868 to be exact, and it was set in Nuremberg, I believe, in the middle of the 16th century. But it's basically just a story about the Guild of Meistersingers, and this, at the time, were amateur poets and musicians, but they all were master craftsmen at various trades. And, of course, the main character in the opera is Hans Sachs, who was a cobbler and amateur poet. But the overture is very stereotypical Wagner, beautiful, majestic brass writing, lush, vibrant string writing with a lot of counterpoint, beautiful solo wind writing, wonderful percussion. It's the orchestra in full regalia and is really a wonderful way to either open or close a program like this, and we're delighted to play it.